I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to a special Champions League edition of the Rabona podcast. Hello again, listeners, and we are now back at full strength. Michael Da Silva, back from injury, has joined us again. Hello, Michael.
Hi. 95% anyway.
95%. Great to have you back.
Coming off the bench.
We'll be joined too by Kirsten Schlewitz to discuss Red Star and Napoli and their exploits in the Champions League. But let's start with the biggest result of the night, Dortmund Atletico.
Yeah. Wow.
My goodness. 4-0 wow. Dortmund.
I mean, I thought Dortmund were going to win because, you know, unbeaten this season. Atletico have been better in recent weeks, but they struggled at the start, haven't been as convincing. They've been trying to integrate the likes of Thomas Lemar. Griezmann hasn't really hit top form. Diego Costa's been out injured. So I kind of had a feeling that Dortmund would take this, but the manner of the victory was incredible. They absolutely steamrolled them in that second half. And 4-0, totally deserved. And Dortmund are one of the teams to look out for, seriously, this year.
Yeah, I had a feeling about it from when, remember when Dortmund beat Real Madrid at home and that season they went to the final?
Yeah.
It's the first time since then I can remember that vibe in the Champions League. We said it on the podcast the other day about how Lucien Favre's bringing Dortmund back to that level of kind of like feeling and excitement that they had at peak Klopp. And I mean, those last three goals came in 15 minutes though, you know, it was the 1-0 till the 72nd, 73rd minute. Mm. And then they just kind of blitzed Atleti.
Well, the breaking point, I think, for Atletico is when Diego Simeone took off Saúl Ñíguez. It was crazy, I thought. Mm. He had hit the crossbar, had two or three other chances and was by far Atletico's biggest goal threat. Took him off in the 70th minute. Two or three minutes later, Dortmund had got that crucial second goal and they just collapsed from there. Usually I'm a big fan of Simeone, but I think he got that one quite wrong.
I think maybe there's an element of foreshadowing from the game against Monaco. They played the last home game of the Champions League where they again broke them down very late. And if you look at the start of the Monaco goals and the start of the goals that they scored against Atletico, similar in the sense that these were team goals. They really broke them down. With the exception of the Witsel strike, they really dismantled the opposition defence. And I think the most worrying thing for Atletico has to be that the amount of times they were given room, Dortmund, in front of the Atletico back four, and the amount of times they went through the middle, the heart of the defence.
Well, you say dismantling. I just wonder whether it's more of an overwhelming, because when they go forward, they just pour forward in numbers, and this is the Favre way. I mean, I think it tends to be the way that Favre has an amazing season or two at the most, and then things start to fall apart because players, I think, are just exhausted.
Yeah.
That's why he's got so many young players in there who have the legs to do it. But the way they just turn defence into attack is exhilarating. I mean, it's so good to watch.
They're so breathtaking to watch. Like we said it a number of times this season, they're like, if you're going to watch one game on the weekend, watch a Dortmund game. Because even if they don't, I mean, was the game a few weeks ago at home when they won, was it 4-3
against Augsburg.
Yeah. And, you know, even when they concede a few and they look like they might be in trouble, they've just got goals in them and they're so exciting to watch. All their games are super exciting. I actually spoke to my dad on the phone yesterday morning and we were talking about Dortmund. And I said to him, I was like, right, watch Dortmund this season, because he hasn't actually watched that much Dortmund. And I got a text off him last night saying, are you watching the Dortmund game?
I love it.
So he's on the
what's funny with Dortmund as well is if you look at the amount of playmakers they've got, you could argue actually the only other club with as many playmakers of similar quality is probably Manchester City.
Mm.
you have Pulisic, Royce, Goetze, Sancho, Alcacer obviously has a nine, but he does more than just score. He links up very, very well.
Yeah.
You know, it's terrific, isn't
it? Yeah, and you know, Dortmund's defence is actually better than people give it credit for. I mean, just I've got the last seven results in front of me here. One of them was a friendly, to be fair, during the international break. But 4-0 Atletico, 4-0 Stuttgart, 4-0 Aachen, that was a friendly. 4-3 Augsburg, 3-0 Monaco, 4-2 Leverkusen, and 7-0 Nuremberg.
Wow.
They're scoring lots, but there's also quite a few zeros in the conceded column there.
Which has been their problem for the last few years. They've just not been able to defend that great.
Yeah, and I think Zagadou and Akanji, they're gelling quicker than I thought they would.
Yeah.
And, I mean, yeah, it's the Jurgen Klopp thing where they needed to sort out that defence, but it's worked quicker than I thought.
I always tend to have sympathy for teams that pour forward like Dortmund do because they have to make some sacrifice at the other end, and you have centre-backs who ultimately have a very high line to keep. Mm. You know, this is the Dejan Lovren problem. A very good defender who is exposed time and time again because the team is pouring forward. Mm. And it's very difficult to have the type of balance that Dortmund have managed. Actually, funnily enough, Spurs have managed that better than pretty much any major team in Europe in the last few years in terms of balance between attack and defence. But it's even cost them, I think, with fatigue at certain points.
Yeah, and players get older and they're not able to keep up with it.
PSG, we need to jump into that because that's an exciting match too. Great finish from Di Maria to end a pretty exciting game.
Yeah, it was all right. It wasn't amazing. The atmosphere seemed really flat, and PSG were quite flat in their performance, I think. Bar the first 10 minutes, they looked really good, and then missed a few chances, dropped off. There was a bit of a lack of intensity, and they got caught out a couple of times by Napoli with Insigne scoring the first. It was a really good finish, actually. I think the keeper probably could have either really committed to coming early or just stayed.
Yeah, he kind of did neither.
Yeah.
Can I just say this as well, in PSG's defence, Napoli also just make you look bad. Like, they're that good.
Yeah, they're great.
So, right. Look at the game against Liverpool, right? So, and it's no coincidence because we saw Liverpool do this and we're like, oh, they look a bit flat, Liverpool. PSG play, oh, PSG look flat. Actually, maybe it's just Napoli absolutely swarming you. They made the Liverpool fullback, was it Trent Arnold?
Mm-hmm.
They made him look really poor. And he's a fantastic player, but it's just that they swarm you and they make you look worse than you are. And, you know, PSG actually came into that game of pretty good form, didn't they?
Yeah. I mean, you know, let's not forget, Napoli pushed Juve all the way to the title last season and really could have won it. I think they got the highest amount of points they've ever had in Serie A last season and still didn't win the league. PSG were without Thiago Silva and they really miss him. I think in defence. They can kind of get away with it in most League One games. But against a side like Napoli in the Champions League, they can really exploit that. I thought the second goal for Napoli could have been potentially a foul. They could have. I mean, it was a little bit soft, but Mertens gave Marquinhos a nudge. I'm surprised there wasn't a bigger appeal for it. But Di Maria got him out of trouble with a wonderful goal.
Yeah. There's actually a couple of things I want to mention there. The first thing is that I love the way that Mertens has been converted into this sort of forward. I'm a big fan of forwards or strikers like developing or enlarging their games. But also Di Maria, who I think is kind of the most... I was talking to him the other day, I think he's the worst best player in the world in terms of... He's just unbelievably frustrating. Actually, I think he's more a kind of an old school winger. He's almost like a sort of mid-90s, early 90s winger, like a Paulo Futre, who one game out of three is absolutely transcendental and spellbinding. And, you know, one and a half, two games out of three, it submerges.
I didn't expect Paulo Futre's name to come up today, to be honest.
Yeah, it's caught me off guard a little bit, to be honest. Well.
Sorry, that's just me adding value.
Caught daydreaming off into the distance there. He's been good this season, though.
Yeah, he
was quite quiet yesterday. I mean, second half, he did not a lot, and then popped up with a wonderful goal. So
I thought Neymar was not back to his best, but he played all right.
Yeah, he was good. He kind of drove quite a lot from deep and created a lot of chances for PSG, especially in the first half. Their finishing could have been better. Cavani and Mbappe missed a couple of chances you would expect them to score. Cavani missed an absolute sitter in the second half and got saved by the offside flag from 4 yards out, I think, put it wide.
You mentioned Meunier, though. He's such a funny player. He just... I mean, you were mentioning before the podcast about the number of... strapping fullbacks there are
unit wingbacks.
And Meunier is certainly one of those. He just pops up from nowhere and just scores or assists.
Yeah, I said this just before we recorded that every time I watch a PSG game that Meunier's playing in, he'll do something at some point. I'm like, oh yeah, Meunier.
Yeah.
I forgot he was there.
It sounded like quite a random comparison to throw in there, but before I forget, do you remember in Rugby Union? I don't know if any of you are Rugby Union fans.
Here we go.
Sorry, guys, sorry. But there was a period in Rugby Union where the wingers were just accepted to be small. And then something happened. There was a really quick, Ben Cohen's of 6'8", and all of a sudden...
Rory Underwood.
Well, yeah, all of a sudden...
We're just naming rugby union players. We've lost 75% of our listeners.
No, there's a point. There is a point here. The point being that wingers traditionally were seen as, oh, you're wide position, you're small, you're tricky, whatever. And then somebody somewhere was like, actually, we can overload people on the flanks and physical power and speed is actually a prerequisite because so I think no one had ever thought about it.
Mm.
And so you had this generation of rugby players where you've got like now wingers for the size of forwards and you've now got forwards in wingers in football who are like absolutely huge. I mean, someone like Gareth Bale, for example, is now the modern fullback. Whereas before it was someone like Lizarazu, if that makes sense.
I find it quite interesting how the number of very fast athletic fullbacks or wingbacks who can also switch to centre-back.
Right.
You know. It seems to be very interchangeable.
I think one of the players who made it such a success in recent years is Ivanovic at Chelsea.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, he showed his versatility on both sides.
Also, maybe that reflects the competitive nature of modern football, you know, as a player. So you look at coming through the ranks, if you can play three or four positions, you're more likely to make it. And that sounds like an obvious point, but someone like Ashley Cole, for example, who for years, I think, actually played in a forward position, I think Sol Campbell was similar, like certain players that start off at certain levels and then move further back and just play wherever they can.
Should
we move on to Shakhtar Man City? Because I think there's a...
Yes, we can. But before we move on to that, let me just jump in again because we haven't mentioned Jadon Sancho. I will always mention him.
Oh,
he's
quick.
So good. He's so good. Very quickly, sorry. Jadon Sancho is so good that
I'm
he is
surprised
now
surprised at you, Michael.
Jadon Sancho is now...
It's just become so normal.
Exactly. We've normalised him. He's normalised. Brilliant.
To be fair, he probably was offside.
Yeah, I think his knee was off. But, you know, he 3 minutes after coming off the bench, he scores. I mean, I think he was unlucky to have been benched ahead of Pulisic. I guess even Lucien Favre didn't realise that it would be such a convincing win and thought that he'd go for that little bit of Champions League experience. Pulisic, I think, is still only 19, is that right? But he does have experience in these big games.
Veteran.
But Sancho really, he emphatically made his point, let's say. And yeah, another goal. He just keeps getting better and better.
I think he was being rested for the weekend.
Ooh.
That's my. That's why Sancho was on the bench.
Oh,
good call!
And that's so there you go. That's where how his status in the squad has changed.
You know, there are some big games coming up for Dortmund.
And they've got Hertha on Saturday.
Some more, but that, yeah, I mean they've got also the reverse game against Atletico coming up on the 6th of November, and then 4 days later they're playing the Clásica against Bayern. And I'd like to see Sancho start. Well, I think he deserves to start both of those games.
Yeah, it's a big week that for them, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, the way things are going, I think you have to say that Bayern are the team that are going to be running scared ahead of that game.
Shakhtar?
Man City.
Right, so...
First time an English side has beaten Shakhtar in the Ukraine.
What?
That's a wild...
Really?
Wild. Is it Donbass Stadium?
Well, it was... No, I mean, they were at the Donbass Stadium, but then with the conflict in 2014, they moved. They've been playing at, I think it's the Metalist Stadium for the last few years. But they're actually playing 150 miles away from Donetsk now.
Yeah.
And they've moved their club operations to Kiev. So they're actually a little bit kind of scattered. How they've managed to keep the atmosphere moving to a stadium that isn't as close to the pitch as the Donbass. But it was, you know, they always seem to be very, very, very difficult to beat. But Man City were great again. I found Guardiola's comments about the Champions League pretty interesting the other day. Did you catch them when he
said
that?
About the fans needing to...
Yeah, he was like, I don't really feel that kind of like hunger for the Champions League here yet. And we're not going to win it. And maybe they'll do it under another manager. And it's just like, they go and then be the first English side to beat Shakhtar in the Ukraine. And I can imagine Guardiola just being like,
well,
it worked.
Guardiola's previous club, Bayern Munich, had quite a lot of hunger for the Champions League and he wasn't able to win it there.
True. Maybe you've got it. Maybe it's one of those when you don't want it, it happens.
He's really funny because he gets... Sorry to jump in. It's just that Guardiola gets away with a lot of... He's quite a funny guy because he does say some quite sort of...
He pushes
pointed
it.
Quite, yeah, he does. Quite sharp things.
He's super odd. Let's get it real about Pep. I love Pep. Like, I love I love Pep. I'm a big Pep fan, but he's really weird.
Yeah.
He's like Spock. He's like Zachary Quinto, Spock. You know, he gets away with it because he's got this kind of, he's a weird, he's an odd dude with very good marketing.
Good trousers.
In January, last January or the January before, when he was, I think City had played really badly. They might have drawn or lost or whatever at home. And the BBC reporter said to him, you don't seem very happy. And he was just like, I am happy. Happy New Year. He's strange. Strange dude, but funny.
One more thing before we're joined by a very special guest in the podcast. Because we normalise sometimes Barcelona's great results, we have to talk very briefly about their win over Inter. Mm. Only because they were without Leo Messi, who was looking gleefully on from the crowd with his Santiago. And they handled a good Inter side in good form pretty comfortably, I would say.
Yeah, Rafinha came in for Messi, which was a big call from Valverde, and did really well, scored a great goal, and was really, really good for Barca. Yeah, I mean, they kind of deserved the win.
I'm a big Rafinha enthusiast as well.
Yeah, he was great. And we have to give a shout out to Spalletti, the tactical mastermind, for the man sliding down behind the wall for any free kicks.
That which was incredible.
Honestly, one of the greatest things I've seen.
Yeah.
At first, I thought he'd slipped. I can't remember who it was, but there was one free kick. That Suarez took a free kick, went under the wall jumped, the guy was laying down behind the wall and it went over the bar.
But he didn't slip though, did he?
No, he didn't slip. I was convinced he slipped. I was like, he must have slipped.
No, that was totally intentional.
But then when I went back and watched the game, I saw they did it a few times earlier in the first half.
And you see Messi giggling. When Messi sees what's happening, he's giggling.
Yeah. As you said, it was like, oh no, they've worked me out. Yeah. I'm not going to be able to roll it under the wall anymore.
Party's over.
But to be honest, that was an impressive win for Barca, because Inter, of course, coming off the back of that Milan derby win, which you guys covered in the last podcast, but Inter have been really in form, and yeah, that wouldn't have been an easy victory for Barca.
We're very happy to be joined today by Kirsten Schlewitz, the co-founder of Unusual Efforts and an expert in Red Star Belgrade and a Napoli fan for her sins. Kirsten, thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us, Kirsten.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks.
And Red Star last night. So they're back in the Champions League. How are you feeling as a Red Star fan and as, I suppose, a former sort of club historian, really? How are you feeling about their return to the Champions League?
Wow, that's quite a burden, actually, to put on the expert and club historian. I feel like I'm just starting out on all this.
Sorry.
You know, it's weird. I've cheered for many teams. It's kind of a joke on Unusual Efforts how many teams I have. But I've never been in a position in which the fan base is just so happy just to be involved in something.
Right.
Like last night, even during halftime when Liverpool were up 2-0, the pub I was at was singing Red Star chants and cheering and doing the call and response type things. And everybody was just having a blast. And I just thought that was fantastic. And then I can contrast it. It changed after the penalty call. That's when the fans got upset.
The first one on Monday. Yeah, I mean, that was a bad call.
Yeah, it was. I mean, obviously I'm biased, but I didn't think it should have been given. Yeah. And obviously no one in that pub thought so either, except the random woman Liverpool fan who wandered in and somehow managed to escape alive. but I just thought it was a really interesting contrast. They were really excited to be back in the Champions League, or back in top European play, I should say, finally, after 27 years. But if Red Star fans feel they're being screwed over, essentially, that's when the mood will change.
One thing I want to ask as well, because, you know, it's been 27 years. Why has it taken so long for Red Star to come back? What have the barriers been to the return?
Well, I think everyone knows that. I won't say everyone knows that they won in 91, but I think everyone knows what started happening in 91.
Right.
Slovenia actually declared independence like 2 weeks after Red Star won that title. They were in it the next season, but then there were sanctions keeping them out of European football for the next 3 years.
Right.
And so if you're not in European football, you're not getting that money. Then also the Bosman rule comes along in 95. And suddenly Red Star is struggling. They don't have that money. Partizan is getting the favoritism from those in charge. They're the ones that get the money to build the youth center, that kind of thing. And Red Star just got stuck in its 80s mindset, essentially, and they couldn't get out of it until pretty much just a few years ago, I'd say.
As a Red Star fan, Kirsten, getting back into the Champions League is obviously a massive step. How is that going to translate to domestic football? Do you think that now, with the money that they'll earn through the Champions League, they'll be able to solidify as a Champions League team?
I mean, a couple of things. First of all, it's been said that Red Star are going to have to sell someone in January because they still don't have the funds to have even done what they did over this summer, like buying Marco Marin and that sort of thing. So obviously we're not there yet. But also, if anything comes out of this match-fixing accusation, it's all going to fall to pieces. That's going to be the end. It's going to be the end for European play for at least a couple of years, and it'll probably cause them to fall down in the standings domestically as well.
Actually, that's something we should probably touch on, because it was mentioned in your piece. If people haven't read it, there's a really good piece that Kirsten wrote for Howler about the match-fixing thing. It was from the PSG Red Star game, right, in Paris.
Yes.
Do you want to maybe fill us in for people who might not have read about it? Because it's a pretty wild story.
So what happened is that I think a week after the game, accusations came out that a Red Star official had tried, I don't think they were successful, but had attempted to place something like a 5 million euro bet on a result that had PSG winning by 5 goals or more. And obviously what happens is PSG won 6-1. And there's a lot of issues with that, which I outline in the article. One that I didn't touch on very much because I, coming from the United States, I don't have a big background in betting.
Yeah.
I just don't understand it that well. So I didn't want to dive too deeply into it. But first of all, it'd be really, really difficult to put a $5 million bet, even in Asian countries where they're a little more lax on betting. They don't allow those kind of bets. So this would have taken coordination by a number of people to actually place enough bets to make it up to 5 million. And then obviously it would have taken at least one of the Red Star players, almost certainly a defender, to pull it off, and possibly more than one.
Just to be clear, Kirsten, was it one bet or a series of bets amounting to 5 million?
I think what they said was that it was a series of bets, but then again, it would almost have to be more than one person, as I understand it, because once those start coming in, you're not going to be able to place more bets because it's going to get flagged.
That's extraordinary, because how does that set to affect? What's the status of the investigation at the moment then into that?
So Red Star have hired a lawyer. They've put out a statement that says essentially that this is slander. This is an attempt to destroy the club's reputation. There are rumors that it was actually all set up by Partizan. That it was Partizan who called in the tip.
That's crazy.
Partizan actually had to go and put out their own statement that said, no, we did not do that. But of course, a lot of Red Star fans still believe it.
And one thing actually, Kirsten, I want to ask as well, and this is actually separate to the Red Star thing, but I want to throw it in because you've done some excellent work on the Cristiano Ronaldo case. And I've seen you get all manner of online abuse for many discussing this online. And I just want to flag up the fantastic work you've been doing discussing your podcast. Any further thoughts on how that case is developing at the moment?
Oh, well, to be honest, for 2 hours before coming on here, I was anxiety cross-stitching because last night I put out a tweet that said Ronaldo should be removed from the Respect commercial that UEFA put out, and a few pretty big names retweeted it, and of course that meant a lot of abuse coming my way. And because I had two stories published yesterday, I couldn't just skip my Twitter mentions. I had to make sure there was nothing genuine I had to respond to. And it just astonishes me that people, their primary response is innocent till proven guilty, which is a legal term that is used to say the prosecution has a burden to establish a case. You know, it's not meant to say there's an allegation against this person, there's evidence that has been seen, therefore there's a commercial which features this man talking about respect because he hasn't been proven guilty. These people are saying the fans shouldn't be able to argue that that commercial should be changed to take him out. People seem so set in their ways of needing to stand behind Ronaldo in this atmosphere, you know, Me Too, all of this that continues to grow. And it seems like you can't say anything against a person until they've had their full and complete day in court. And quite likely, that's never going to happen for him. He has these lawyers exactly so that will never happen.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I think it's going to be a very interesting few months to see how this develops. But I don't think, you know, Michael obviously works with German media very closely at Deutsche Welle, and he's, you know, obviously someone who's quite clued up on the state of things at Der Spiegel. And they're a publication who don't make allegations unless they're extremely confident that they have, you know, the numbers and the stats to back it all up. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Back to the field, though, a quick discussion of Napoli and their game last night, because they looked actually really quite good for large periods against PSG, and maybe unlucky to come away without the win.
Well, obviously, I'd say they're unlucky. I was just watching a video before y'all called, and it showed the 21 passes that led up to the Insigne goal last night. And I just thought that was incredible. I don't know, y'all said you were talking about this game before, and I don't know if you pointed that out.
We did not.
No, I didn't. I did not realize there were that many passes. Yeah. That's wonderful. Yeah, actually, wow. I didn't spot that. It's fantastic. 21.
You can, 21, and you can just see how it slows down the game, and Napoli have time to play their way, their thoughts, their way of articulating those passes, and then it finally gets to Callejon, and his pass is just jewel worthy. I think for a lot of people who aren't Napoli fans, and even some who are, Jose Callejon just doesn't get the credit he receives, because he was originally supposed to be a traditional forward and now he's not scoring, but he's playing such an instrumental role in so many of our goals that he deserves to get the credit.
What are your thoughts on the job that Carlo Ancelotti is doing so far? Because he has come in and it's an unenviable task. You know, Maurizio Sarri did such a good job last year, got them so close to winning Serie A. What are your initial impressions of Ancelotti?
Well, I'm going to be honest, I wasn't thrilled because I thought Ancelotti was perhaps getting a little too old for this. I just tend to like young managers more, and I love Sarri, even though he's not that young. He seemed to me to have a fresher take on the game. But then I realized, even going into this season, even after a summer, even for those who didn't play in the World Cup, these players were just exhausted. He never rotated the squad. It was the same players playing all three competitions. And then Ancelotti, he knows how to do that. And I think we've had maybe one player play every game. I don't even know if that's true. That was the case before the international break, so it might not be the case anymore. But he's doing a spectacular job with squad rotation. And now that these players have gotten more used to that and gotten more used to him and to, you know, changing things up and playing with different formations and everything, I think a lot of the glitches are going away, and that we'll really continue to see a stronger and stronger Napoli side.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And after a couple of false dawns for Carlo Ancelotti, and maybe he's found the perfect club for him.
Let's hope.
Kirsten, well, thank you so much. We've really got our pound of flesh from you there. Red Star on Napoli. Cristiano Ronaldo. My goodness, we'd give you three times the paychecks for that. But absolute joy to have you on. Where can we find you online? Where can listeners find you?
You can find me at KD Schlewitz on Twitter. And if anybody's interested in pictures, I'm also at Kirsten_lives_Belgrade on Instagram.
Wonderful. Cool. And we can find your podcast, is it at Unusual Efforts on Twitter as well?
Yes, at Unusual Efforts. And that's my creation, my baby, along with Sonia Micio. But I also am involved in Far From Vesuvius, Napoli podcast, which will be starting back up next week. So nice. Take a look at that.
Goodness me, you're a force of nature. Well, absolute joy.
I actually need a nap right now.
Absolute joy to have you on. And we look forward to following all your work online and hopefully joining us again at some point in the future.
I would love to. And thank you so much.
Pleasure.
Thanks, Kirsten.
Thank you. So, great contribution from Kirsten there. We're almost done. But Michael, we've got a bit of a treat coming up in the next podcast, haven't we?
Yeah. So I spoke to the German football legend Michael Ballack recently. He told me some interesting stuff and a lot of interesting thoughts on the 50+1 rule here in Germany, the Bundesliga, Bayern's dominance up until this season anyway. And yeah, so that will be coming on our next podcast.
Great stuff. Exclusive Ballack content. Oh my goodness me.
The time is right.
Yeah.
Well, great discussion as ever. And thank you so much, Michael, for returning to almost full health.
Yeah, thanks.
Important minutes.
You're coughing. You know, you're like coughing.
Cough away from the microphone.
You're like when Neymar got kicked in the ankle the other day against Napoli. He's rolling around. Face. It's like that. We get it. You're hurt. It's fine. We're sympathetic.
But it's attention.
Stop milking it.
Okay. Thank you so much, audience, for joining us again. Michael no longer indisposed, Ryan on fine form as ever, and Kirsten dropping in to give us a great perspective on Red Star, Napoli and the developing Cristiano Ronaldo case. Thank you so much for listening. We're on all social media channels at RabonaMag. We'll catch you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.